Welcome, listeners, to Business IQ Radio. Hopefully you're tuning in today to hear about everything you need to know to make your business stronger, better, more profitable. And I'm your host, your co-host, Andrea O'Brien, and I'm here with my very favorite co-host, Don Byrne. How are you, Don?
I'm doing excellent, Andrea. Nice to be seeing you again.
It's always a pleasure to see you, especially coming off of a Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, and the parade.
The parade.
We had less than 8,000 people at the parade. And
in,
I don't know
in
if we
the
had
parade.
I don't think we had people from every state. I didn't see anybody. I asked if anybody was from California. One person, I thought they said Alaska, or maybe they said, I'll ask her. I'm not exactly sure what they said.
But
it was really a fun time. And we need to do a better job of promoting this. Right.
It was my first parade, you know, the bucket list. So that was my first parade.
And you made some nice signs.
I did.
You built the visibility of Business IQ
right.
Radio.
I have to tell you that carrying those signs in the parade from the onlookers, I don't know if they knew I was or was not making a political statement. And I wasn't making a political statement at all. It was our sign off. You can spend more than you make, but you can only do it for so long.
Right.
I wasn't getting a lot of positive facial expressions back. They were
it
like,
is a Republican town, after
they
all.
They were not so happy.
Well, we have, speaking of sign-offs and other matters related to the government, we have an interesting guest today that you've been able to bring in, right?
Yes. She is a wonderful leader. I would say she's a leader in the state. It's Greta Johansson. She's the district director for the New Hampshire District Office of the Small Business Administration.
And we met her and we had a little snippet of her on the air when we went to the SBA Awards and were so impressed that we wanted to bring her in for a full show.
Yeah, you know, the SBA does a lot in the state that you may not be aware of. They're kind of in the background, but they have a big impact. You know, they work with banks and, lenders. They provide the business community with resource partners. They engage in economic development activities.
Yeah, like a nexus. They're a connection point, right?
Yeah, and a facilitator. They host a couple of really important business events in the state. And the interesting thing about Greta is she's actually her degree is in math.
Which is a good thing to have. So here is my question, because when I first met you, I was confused about this. You're the SBDC, and you get some funding from the SBA, but how do you differ from the SBA, and what is your relationship to the SBA? Just to clarify it.
So we are a partner, a resource partner, and our budget is funded by federal grants through the SBA. So the Small Business Administration gives us grants, and we get matching, I don't know if you call it a grant or matching funds from the state of New Hampshire through the Department of Resources and Economic Development.
But you're really the people sort of on the front line, and they're the people standing behind you providing
right.
other programs and infrastructure.
Yep. So if they get a call from a business that needs, you know, boots on the ground help, that's where SBDC would come in, or SCORE. They're another resource partner, or the Center for Women Enterprise down in Nashua, Temple Street in Nashua.
Well, it'll be interesting to talk to Greta. And I know from what you've told me and scanning her bio a little bit, she actually has some background in the disaster area as well, having worked in that for a number of years,
yeah.
I think, out west someplace.
Yeah, she has many years as being on the ground in areas of a natural disaster, trying to help business. And I think she probably has a few stories that she could tell us.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll ask her about that. And it's always interesting to see how someone makes the way to New Hampshire when they're not native to New Hampshire. I think she's originally from Connecticut, but as you said, she went to Stanford, wonderful school out
yeah.
in California, to get her degree in
yep.
mathematics.
I'm guessing she probably could have worked anywhere with a degree in mathematics from Stanford. And luckily, she ended up working for a business, business.
The other thing we want to ask her about and make sure that we get her to tell us how to find out about it is, I know that organization runs some great webinars. That's a real strength, and they run a couple of different events. Like we, as I mentioned before, met them at the SBA Awards dinner. So we'll have to make sure that we talk to her about that and the various webinars. I know you're a fan of their webinars as well.
Well, it's, you know, webinars are great. You don't have to leave your desk or your office, and it's a very, you know, convenient, free, and oftentimes you can revisit the webinar if there's something specific, you know, you want to, and they're easy to share. So I'm all in favor of webinars.
Well, that's all good. And they probably have some upcoming events, so we'll ask them about some events. Any events that you want to call out? I think we're coming into the summer, and it's sort of a down period right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know of a lot of activities. Of course, people can always find out about things at the SBDC website.
June 29th. There is an event on cybersecurity.
Oh, yes.
And what businesses have to know.
We've been invited to actually broadcast from there. We should go.
Yes. We should do that.
Yeah, that we'll make an effort to do that. I don't know if I'm traveling. We'll make an effort to do that. Of course, as always, we'll ask our listeners, if you have topics that you'd like to see covered, guests that you think might be interesting, or just like to make some general comments, please contact us through the town website or Facebook page here at the radio station. And we may be coming out with our own at some point in time in the not distant future, but we'll hold off on that until then. So good. Well, I guess at that point we can look to bring Greta in. Is there anything else you want to say in terms of her background and some things like that that the listeners should know about?
Just that she does a great job, you know, keeping us all connected and leading the SBA in the state of New Hampshire. And if you ever need anything, I think you could just call her. She's just a really easy person to talk to. She's very knowledgeable, and so we're lucky to have her today.
Yeah, I like I've heard them say something about they have this open door, no wrong door policy, which they have all these interlocking relationships and partnerships. And I think the attitude, which I really admire, is, you know, it doesn't matter who you call, we'll connect you with the right person. And that's SBDC, it's SCORE, it's the Center for Women Enterprise, it's dealing with veterans matters, it's just a whole variety of different ones. And that's such a positive and I don't know, such a really beneficial
constructive
approach.
Yeah. You know, so if you need information, there's only, you know, sba.gov/NH.
Or the NHSBDC.
Thank you. .com.
All right. Well, that note, why don't you, you know, we've got her out there. So let's bring Greta in.
Greta, thanks so much for being on the show today. And I would want to start off, I noted in your bio that you're from Mystic, Connecticut. I want to start off by asking you a little bit about how you got to be the district director of SBA, but also I want you to talk about the pizza in Mystic, Connecticut, because I hear it's pretty good.
at least that's what Hollywood wants us to believe, right?
Yes, Mystic Pizza, the movie that launched Julia Roberts' career, and you can now find Mystic Pizza in grocery store freezers everywhere. I can't say that I've ever had Mystic Pizza. Okay. It was Ted's Pizza before that, when Ted Haynes owned it, and that was the last time I ate there was when Ted still owned it. But I understand it's wonderful.
So tell us about a little bit about your background. You're a mathematician by degree, or?
Yes, by degree.
By degree.
Well, I ended up in school in California because of family circumstances. I thought I'd never leave Connecticut, and I ended up in California anyway somehow. And I got a degree in mathematical sciences at a time before the microchip, before cell phones, before all of that stuff.
Are when you saying I think, it was an easy degree? No.
No, I'm saying it was a different world.
It's when you had to use your fingers to count.
Apple and Microsoft were babies operating out of their garages. So it was a very long time ago. It was a very different world. And I somehow, despite that degree, did not take that route. I came back to Connecticut after I graduated and tried to figure out what to do with myself. And we had a flood. And SBA has a disaster assistance division. And that's how I came to the SBA, through the disaster assistance division.
Hmm.
So I did that for quite a while at different offices around the country. About 14 and a half years, I worked on SBA's Office of Disaster Assistance. And then I just had kind of had enough and didn't want to live life by the Weather Channel anymore. So I left the disaster side of things and thought I'd come over to what I thought of as the normal side of the agency. And I transferred to the district office in Connecticut. I worked there for another 14 and a half years when this opportunity to come up to New Hampshire came up, and I couldn't pass it up. I had the chance, and I was fortunate to be selected. I've been here a little over 6 years now and loving every minute of it.
Nice. In your role as, or in the disaster assistance team, I bet you saw some pretty amazing, not in a good way.
Yeah.
But can you tell us a little bit about maybe some of the things that maybe stuck in your memory
about something noteworthy that
noteworthy.
I think some of the most noteworthy things was I was working in, we had an office in Sacramento, California, and I was working there for over 8 years. And our territory included 14 states in the Pacific territories. And it was a pretty broad range of responsibilities and just about any kind of disaster you can imagine. And what never ceased to amaze me is we'd be in a place that had just been impacted by a disaster, an earthquake. Houses have been bounced right off their foundations. Roofs have fallen off. Chimneys have fallen through the roofs. People have lost everything or almost everything they ever owned. And they were so generous and so magnanimous and so giving and so patient. And you could have someone who'd been waiting for a phone call for months, and you get them on the phone. They go, hi, nope, we're doing okay. I know you're busy. People are amazing in the face of these horrific disasters. And one of the greatest rewards I ever had was being able to return to these places 6 months, a year, 2 years down the road and see everything's back in place. The houses are back where they belong. Roofs have been repaired. Lives have been restored. Businesses have reopened. And that's one of the most rewarding things.
Let me ask you a little bit about that. Are you finding then that this, it sounds to me that not only are people generous, but you're saying that they have a real sense of community. Does that sense of community endure, you know, 6 months later? Or is it a better community? Are people feeling a little bit more connected, united, willing to speak to each other and things of that nature?
I have found that following a very serious disaster, yes, it does have a community-wide impact. There can be fairly small disasters that impact a small neighborhood without impacting an entire community. But when you look at some of the tornadoes that have wiped out entire towns, that it takes a whole community to pull it together again. And you put away things you maybe used to disagree over. It didn't matter. Things you used to disagree on don't matter anymore. Anything that was other than life and death just didn't matter anymore. And you pull together for the sake of the community and you rebuild, because that's just what we do. And it does have a lasting impact on entire communities. And they have their own memorials and annual events surrounding their rebuilding and their, you know, revival from digging themselves up out of the ashes.
Now, I know that that's a little bit in your past, but if I can ask you one other question, help us understand a little bit about the SBA's role versus FEMA's role in those kinds of recoveries, because you're kind of sister agencies, but I don't know where the handoff is and where one picks up and the other leaves off.
FEMA has a very broad role that includes both direct assistance and it fills an umbrella role. And if FEMA issues a presidential disaster declaration, there are a lot of agencies, including SBA. SBA is just one of them that comes in under that umbrella and provides different types of services to help in the recovery effort. FEMA also has emergency response responsibilities. SBA is not an emergency responder. SBA is a recovery service. And it is, we provide low interest loans to homeowners, renters, businesses, churches, not-for-profit organizations, whatever, anybody who has an uninsured or underinsured loss from the disaster who has at least a little bit of capacity to repay a loan.
Yeah, I have a little bit of experience with this because I worked with the people down in Louisiana and Katrina in the oil spill. And the one lesson I think that a lot of businesses learned was do keep your tax records and do keep some kind of an income statement to be able to validate what you were making and how you were doing, because that is part of the key to being able to successfully apply for some of these loans, right?
It is. You do need to keep your records. And while we can access transcripts for taxes that were actually filed, we can access transcripts through the IRS. IRS has a, you know, disaster response responsibility as well in terms of providing those records. There are your financial records, deeds to property, things that you really need to think about how you store those things. And do you have them in a fireproof box? Do you have them in a waterproof container? You know, what are some of your other options for storage? Think about things that should never be stored in a basement, should maybe be stored in an attic. Or if you're in tornado territory, store nothing in an attic, put it all in the basement. I mean, it really just depends what your risks are. But that is part of thinking about, if the worst thing happens, can I find the records that I need? And some things you may be able to get directly from another agency, like the IRS. You can go to the town hall and get a copy of your deed. You can do a variety of things. Car titles, it's hard to dig up a car title if you don't have yours. It's hard to get one recreated. So,
it's especially hard if the town hall has been wiped off the map. We had innumerable stories of people writing to get copies of their mortgage, and everything was being sent to a post office that didn't exist anymore in the in the Ninth Ward, because it was actually flooded and washed off its foundation, and all kinds of issues. So the idea of having duplicate copies, and even though sometimes duplicate copies aren't legal copies, you can get them legalized so that they can take the role, and it's very important stuff. So
if you follow cybersecurity protocol, you have more options for storing documents today, because you can do cloud storage that can be independent of a disaster in your area.
Right.
So there are some ways that you can safeguard documents, or at least copies of documents now, that we didn't used to have available.
You know, every morning, it seems like every morning when I turn the news on, there's some horrific weather event in the country. And of course, you see people just living, you know, their lives have been completely pulled apart. And the economic devastation that comes after that really must drag a region down. And that's where SBA would come in, perhaps, and along with other agencies. How would someone access services through the SBA in a time like that?
There is a call center number, which I used to be able to rattle off right off the top of my head, because it's the same number we had when I worked in Niagara Falls. But I can't run it off for you right now. But there is a call number for, there's always a dedicated line for FEMA and a dedicated line for the SBA. Mm-hmm. And SBA's call center number is always the same, always, no matter what.
And does it require a like a presidential declaration?
The large disasters are always presidential declarations, and those automatically bring in the SBA as well as a variety of other resources. SBA also has the authority to issue its own disaster declarations when the severity of the damage is not enough to warrant a presidential declaration, but it's still severe enough that recovery is dependent on some form of assistance. So we do have the authority to issue our own declarations under certain circumstances. And that's great for the people who can qualify for a low interest rate, generous term recovery loan. It's not so hot for all the other needs that may exist in a community, and it doesn't include public assistance, which is one of FEMA's role. Public assistance includes funds to help reimburse cities and towns and states for the cleanup costs, for the things that they had to do, for restoration of power and restoration of, you know, basic sewer and water and functionality. Just snow removal can sometimes create such an extraordinary cost when you have severe snow events that the snow removal costs exceed the standard state's operating budget for that. And there can sometimes, when circumstances warrant, be public assistance available for those kinds of funds. But SBA is entirely private assistance. It's for the individuals and the businesses and the entities who were not adequately insured to recoup from their losses.
I just want to point out, so in New Hampshire, we've had, you know, we can talk about those severe events, but we also have those more broad, less talked about events like lack of snow or drought. Last summer, we had a really tough drought. And
SBA does not declare drought as a disaster, which includes lack of snow, because that's another form of lack of moisture. The Department of Agriculture does. SBA's disaster declarations are described as for sudden and catastrophic events, and that's statutory. That's not something we have a choice about. However, there were numerous designations following the droughts that are initiated by the Department of Agriculture based on agricultural losses. And any time that the Department of Agriculture issues a declaration based on that kind of loss. SBA comes in with its own, what we call our economic injury disaster loan program, in the same areas for the businesses who were dependent on that agricultural production, who are within that community, are dependent on the agricultural production. One of the easiest examples is if there's no crop, then the crop duster didn't have a job either. Neither did the person who sells the seeds or the local hardware store. It's when agricultural communities have severe crop loss, the entire community is impacted. So USDA, the Department of Agriculture, can work with the growers, and we can work with the other folks that USDA does not lend to.
Yeah, we saw a good example of that again in Louisiana, because with the oil spill, the shrimpers couldn't bring in shrimp. That affected the truckers that we used to take and take this, you know, people that would process the shrimp, people that would deliver the shrimp, restaurants trying to serve the shrimp. You know, up to over 100 or 150 miles away, people were applying and getting SBA loans.
We had the same thing following, not to bring up another horrible subject, but following 9/11, people couldn't get anywhere. New York City was closed. People who depended on commuter traffic driving by or taking the train in, the impact from the airport closures and all of those things, you could have been anywhere in the country and have been impacted by that. You could have been impacted because your primary client was there. Mm-hmm. Variety of things could have impacted businesses. And that's when we realized borders don't mean what they used to, and disaster declarations and their impact, the disaster's impact, is not defined any longer by specific borders. Yeah. You generally, if you have a disaster, it's localized. But sometimes something is so severe, it's way beyond local. Yeah.
So how big is small? What is, we're talking about the Small Business Administration. How big an organization does the Small Business Administration support?
How big an organization is the SBA?
Yeah. How big is a business? How big are your clients that are considered small businesses?
Outside of the disaster program, because disaster is much broader than the non-disaster side. Just about somewhere between 94 and 96% of all the businesses in New Hampshire are small. Small is not as straightforward a statement as we'd like it to be, because there are size standards that apply by industry. And there are industry codes for all different kinds of businesses. There's a book on industry codes, and there's a size standard for every code. So I can say in general, for professional services, those kinds of things, that average annual receipts of less than $7 million might be the size standard. But there are some industries where the average annual receipts are less than $21 million. Most wholesalers, I think it is, the average employees of fewer than 100. Although there's some that are bigger than that, some that are smaller than that. Manufacturing is also an employee-based size standard. So it's, most businesses are small, so odds are you're going to meet our size standard. But if you're large enough or have enough of affiliated businesses, this is just one thing I do. I've got four other businesses. If you're in that position where you think you might be running up against it, you know, give us a holler and we'll find the right industry code and the right size standard and help you figure out if you're still small. But
and you said that in a crisis, that definition becomes a little fungible and expandable.
Well, in the disaster loan program, large businesses may still be eligible for loans to repair physical damages if they were not adequately secured. They are not eligible for what we call the economic injury loan program, which is a revenue loss based decision, not a physical damage based decision. And so there are some other peculiarities, but by and large, there's still eligibility for large businesses under the disaster loan program if the business was underinsured and needs to rebuild.
You're listening to 105.1 WBNH, and this is Business IQ Radio. Our guest today is Greta Johansson. She's the district director of the New Hampshire District Office in Concord of the SBA, Small Business Administration. Greta, often I get clients that think that SBA lends money. I want an SBA loan. And I'd like you to just tell us how SBA fits into that whole loan mechanism with small business and banking.
Once upon a time, SBA did direct lending to small businesses, but we dropped that in about the mid-90s, and that is largely a budgetary and capacity decision. How do we do more if there's not enough money for us to be the direct lender. So what we developed is a way to provide enhancements to the private sector lenders, because they're the lenders who are in the business of doing small business lending, commercial lending anyway. And we developed various ways to help them say yes more often. So now an SBA loan, instead of a direct loan, an SBA small business loan is a guaranteed loan or a partnership loan with private sector lenders, which means if a business is needs to borrow anywhere up to $5 million, which is our maximum loan amount, and if there's a bank that's willing to do it, but they're a little bit uncomfortable because the deal is going to be under collateralized, or maybe the business is kind of young, they're only a year old, and they don't have enough of a track record, that lender can say, okay, we can do this, but it's a little outside our policy. It's got this little challenge for us, so we're going to attach the SBA guarantee to it. What that means is SBA guarantees up to 75% of that loan amount, and which means in the worst case scenario, if the business is unable to be successful and we have to liquidate that loan, when all is said and done, whatever the resulting loss is, if any, SBA takes 75% of that loss and the bank only loses 25% of the loss. So that expands the pool of bankable borrowers for our private sector lenders.
So in New Hampshire, how are we doing? Is SBA fully committed to? I mean, I know you're committed, but.
Are you saying, are we getting our fair share? Is that what you're asking?
Are we getting a big piece of the pie? Are New Hampshire businesses, having enough economic activities in comparison to maybe some other states? You know, and lending, I think, is one measure of economic activity.
Well, we had a couple of pretty slow years following the recession. Actually, we have a little bit of a delayed impact when it starts to hit showing on our numbers. But we did have some slow years, and we've been steadily creeping back up out of that. And one of the things that works to our advantage in New Hampshire is every bank in the state with a commercial lending division participates with us. We have, I don't know, somewhere between a half dozen and 10 active credit unions that participate with us. And we have lenders who know each other and they know the other partners in the state. And we have non-traditional lenders. We have regional economic development corporations throughout the state. And our lenders know how to maximize what they can do by using our enhancement programs, by partnering with another bank, by partnering with a non-traditional lender, by doing a variety of things to help keep things moving and keep capital flowing in New Hampshire. We have, for the last few years, guaranteed over $150 million in loans to small businesses in the state. We fare very, very well compared to states of similar population sizes. We do better than many states based on population. We have one of our loan products that is used almost disproportionately successfully here. The SBA 504 loan program, which is a fixed asset acquisition loan program done in partnership with private sector banks, is more active in New Hampshire based on population than it has, any expectation of being in most other states. So we are well served by very dedicated and active lenders in New Hampshire.
When you say fixed asset, you mean real estate or equipment or?
Fixed assets includes real estate and long-term equipment. We're talking equipment with a minimum anticipated life of 10 years. So it's got to be 10 years or longer life, which can include a lot of things. I mean, there are pizza ovens that have been around for 50 years. So,
sure. And is it only for-profit businesses? Do you help nonprofits as well?
We are not able to help nonprofits on the small business side of things. The definition of small business includes not just the size standard, but that the business be organized for profit.
So it can be a sole proprietorship, or it could be an LLC, or it could be a C-Corp of some type, right?
S-Corp, C-Corp, LLC. LLCs are the most popular these days, but there's still a few of the others floating around.
Right. Yeah.
Especially if
you want to get acquired. Makes it easier to do the acquisition if you have stock instead of units and stuff like that.
It can't be. You don't help who? You have some.
We do not help anything illegal. We aren't in the business of lending to investors, so we're not looking to support
venture capital people, for example.
Yeah,
hedge funds.
We don't lend to financial institutions. We don't lend to landlords. Huh. We're not in the business of lending to people who are trying to buy something for investment purposes, which includes, you know, landlords of strip malls. Now, we may be able to lend to the individual businesses within that mall, but we can't lend to the owner of the real estate unless the owner of the real estate is also going to operate a going concern out of the real estate they own. It's become very common to own real estate in a separate company from the business that's actually operating. And we can deal with that so long as the same people's operating company is going to be operating out of that real estate. But those are the basics of what we don't do. We don't do gambling entities. We're not concerned about the fact that there may be some revenues from lottery tickets and things like that, so long as it's not primarily what a business does.
Yeah, so a retail store that sells lottery tickets and gets a little participation is not a disqualifier. Yeah,
correct. It would only be a disqualifier if it was the majority of their revenue, and that just doesn't happen.
Right. So I was a little intrigued with something you were saying before about looking at the development over time. Do you folks do economic modeling? Do you look out, and if so, do you have a sense of how business is doing? You know, are you forecasting? And I mean, are we in an uptick? Are we in a recovery? Are we doing pretty well? I know people are tracking all kinds of things, including, you know, employment and unemployment statistics, and a lot of jobs going wanting. So, just wondering, do you folks look at any of those issues?
We look at those issues. That's not our primary role, is to figure that out. We just pay attention to what the other economic development entities, you know, they sort of dictate when we're in a recession or when we're out of a recession or how things are going. We pay attention to that because it has an impact, or it can have an impact, on how busy we might be or what we might expect out of the local business communities. But we do have a research division within our Office of Advocacy that's not locally here in my office in New Hampshire, but in our headquarters in Washington, D.C., there's an Office of Advocacy, and there are some economists who work there, and they do a fair amount of research, and they'll do presentation papers, and they study census data and economic forecasts and all other kinds of things to provide us with some helpful information and some useful research from time to time.
And what if it's a small business that wants to diversify and go internationally? Can you help them in any way if they're looking to expand into the internet? I mean, once you put up a website, you're doing business worldwide.
Absolutely. We actually had a discussion about that with some other partners earlier this morning. We are part of a network of resources that are available to help businesses that want to export, whatever stage they're at. If they're just thinking about it and I need to come up with a strategy, or if they know I already have a customer and I need to make sure I'm doing this right, whatever that may be. We actually have three of our loan products are specifically for supporting exporting activity. But in addition to that, we're a part of a network that includes the state's Office of International Commerce. It includes U.S. Commercial Services has staff over in the Seacoast area. The SBDC has advisors, one of whom receives specific training to help businesses, what we call new to exporting, to help them develop their strategies and their export marketing plan. And just through that network, there are a variety of resources that can help people with proper documentation, all the shipping things, the local distributors in other countries, and all of the things that are involved with exporting. There's a whole network of folks ready and waiting to help people export.
You know, a few years ago, I want to talk about the Office of Advocacy. For consecutive years, I remember there being like these listening meetings where you would bring your gripe to a panel or, you know, a meeting. And you could, if you're a business owner, you could voice some of your frustration you've had over either a law or something that you've run into that's impeded your growth. Do you?
Or an SBDC employee or?
Yes. Or any of those things could happen. There are
or a radio co-host, any of those things.
There are two sides to that we sort of informally think of as wet ink and dry ink. The Office of Advocacy deals with the wet ink, which means we're dealing with proposed regulations before they become effective as regulation or as statute. And we'll do listening sessions with the people who are going to be impacted by a proposal, because proposals with the best of intentions may very well have unintended consequences, particularly on small businesses. So that is one of the roles of the Office of Advocacy, is to read through volumes of proposed regulations on a regular basis and assess potential implications or adverse consequences on small businesses before they happen. On the flip side of that, on the dry ink side of things, we have a national ombudsman. We have an ombudsman's office and headquarters, and they work in a variety of ways, and they will hold, we call them regulatory fairness hearings, and there are regulatory fairness boards, and they hold hearings and take testimony and input from people who have been impacted adversely after the fact by things that have already become statute or regulation and are having those unintended consequences. And it could be that an EPA requirement on certain specifications to prevent contaminants may cost $100,000 to implement what is taken, and you what it takes to correct that problem. And you take a little local diner saying, seriously, you think I have $100,000 to do this? And if they don't do it, there are fines. And this is where the ombudsman's team can come in and negotiate between the business and the need, because it's not that the EPA's need isn't legitimate. It's just that the proposed solutions cannot be met by small businesses. So you have to come up with an alternative. And that's the dry ink side of things, is to come in after the fact. We'd like to catch it before it happens because it's easier to fix it before it happens. But we do have that vehicle for trying to address things after they happen.
I really like your expression, the dry ink side of things. I'm going to pick that and start using that.
It's
a good metaphor, really.
I don't know where that came from, but that's the way we think of it.
Do we have any regulatory fairness hearings scheduled coming up?
We have a new national ombudsman, and please don't ask me the name because I can't come up with that at the moment. With the change in administration, we have a change in a lot of the positions in headquarters, and we've not met everyone yet. But there is going to be a tour throughout New England, and I think it's going to be in August. I think we were looking at the possibility of 2 or 3 or 4 locations in New England sometime in August. We're trying to piggyback off each other, which is something we can do in New England. We're kind of close enough to get around and visit multiple states in the same trip.
That's great. So we'll keep a lookout for that and try to get the word out.
So speaking of locations, first of all, I met you at the SBA Annual Awards, which was a terrific event. I became aware of, you know, other things you do other than just loans and things like the veterans programs. Maybe you could give us a sense of the other kinds of programs you're involved in. And where are you in the state? I know you're in Concord. I think you're in Nashua, but where are you guys?
The SBA office proper, our SBA office, we have the one location in Concord. We have partners, however, who are all over the state. Andrea's with the New Hampshire Small Business Development Center, and they have, I don't know, what, 15 locations now or something?
I think like 7 or 8.
I don't know.
Oh,
sure?
Well, we have 7 or 8 advisors.
Advisors, and you cover
multiple locations
as needed.
Yeah.
There's
15 or 16.
I feel like I'm everywhere doing everything.
We also have a women's business center, the Center for Women at Enterprise, which is based in Nashua. And they're authorized to cover the state, but they have their one permanent location in Nashua. And we have SCORE, which is a volunteer organization that partnered nationally with the SBA many years ago. And as a volunteer group, it has many more members, but not full-time
employees.
Yeah, we've
had some SCORE people on the show.
Correct. We have 6 SCORE chapters in the state. So we have, if you put all of those locations together, you've got quite a few locations where people can go physically to get assistance, or where they can call, or websites they can visit and tap into resources online.
And then you do have a program for veterans, if I'm correct?
What we have for veterans is primarily targeted marketing.
Okay.
But we have, once upon a time, we had tested a loan product specifically for veterans, and it was somewhat effective, but it never became a permanent part of our loan portfolio. So when we lost that product as a pilot, what we developed instead is a fee relief component to our conventional lending. Our loans come with a guarantee fee. It's how we can afford to have the loan program. The guarantee fee is a piece of what offsets any potential losses down the road, and it's how we're able to operate at what we call a zero subsidy, so that we don't need to be granted budget funds, you know, out of the taxpayers' dollars to have loan funds.
We appreciate that.
So that's how that works. But for veteran, for everybody right now, loans up to $150,000 do not have a guarantee fee. We've waived that guarantee fee. Specifically for veteran-owned businesses, we've waived the guarantee fee on any SBA Express loans. And SBA Express loans go up to $350,000, and they are our most popular loan product. So there are veteran-owned businesses getting the benefit of that. And for other loans up to $500,000, if it's not an Express loan, we've cut the fee in half. So if it's over that $150,000 where there's no fee, between $150,000 and $500,000, we've cut their guarantee fee in half. So that's what we have, what we call the Veterans Advantage right now, is fee relief on the same loan product that everybody else gets and pays a different fee for.
Yeah, it's amazing to me, having done this show now for, you know, well over a year, probably 14, 15 months. And it's terrific to have Andrea here, because there is this very complex network of interrelated agencies and groups that can step forward and help each other. We just had someone on the show who's with the PTAP program, for example.
We work with them a lot.
Yeah. So there are all these relationships, and you really need somebody who can sort of help you project manage what resources to go to and where you go. I think in a lot of cases, that's what the SBDC folks are doing, right, Andrea? That's kind of your role, how you relate to the SBA and some of these other groups.
You know, we are part of a network of resources that, you know, tries to help small business, and we complement each other. We support each other. We co-sponsor events together. For example, the Matchmaker, we talked mm-hmm. about that last week, is coming up in December.
December 1st.
And that's a major event for SBA.
It is. It's a major event for SBA. It's a co-sponsorship with us, with the Small Business Development Center, and with the Government Contracting Assistance Center, the PTAP folks. And that is specifically to help small businesses find the contacts they need to sell more to large prime contractors or to other federal agencies. And it's a hugely successful event every year. And we work in the government contracting arena as well on some of the specialty certifications. The SBA has an oversight role in the government contracting world in terms of that the federal agencies are charged with, they're goaled with spending their dollars, a certain percentage of their dollars, on small businesses. And we have an oversight role in that, and we make the results public. So there are goals for how much you lend to service-disabled veteran-owned businesses, how much you lend to businesses under the Woman-Owned Small Business Program. There's just a variety of different loans. How much not lend, how much you contract to small businesses. So the matchmaking event is a big part of helping those agencies meet their goals.
I'd like to talk to you a little bit about some of the people we met at the awards dinner, but first I also want to ask you a little question. Whenever we have folks like you representing agencies, I like to ask, are there any unusual businesses that you've run into or any interesting stories? We had the folks from the PTAP program telling us about working with a group whose business was the reflective paint that goes on roads, and helping them partner with people in different industries, and how that's actually, they, even though they're a state agency, they're reaching outside of New Hampshire to help these people because highways are everywhere. I have a particular interest in drone technology, so if you have any stories about the drone business, I'm interested. But that's okay if not. But just, you know, any unusual or interesting businesses come to mind in New Hampshire that you've sort of run into in the... And maybe you don't, but I usually like to throw this question at people.
Well, there's one of the businesses that was at our event that is having a nationwide impact and that partners with other practitioners all over the country and all over the world, really. So maybe that's a good example to give you.
That the people doing the, it had to do with water and the design of propellers and things like that. Is that the one you're thinking of?
No, but that's probably another good one. No, I was thinking of Celdara Medical, which they're located in the Upper Valley.
So Celdara, I'm not sure that I remember them, but I'm not quite sure I remember exactly what they did.
Well, Celdara Medical works, they're headquartered up in the Upper Valley. Right. And there is a research program called the Small Business Innovative Research Program, and 11 federal agencies participate in that. And they provide a teeny small little percentage of their dollars every year in the form of grants to research institutions and small businesses to solve certain problems. Sometimes they're very specified. Sometimes they're a little broader than that. And there are patents all over the country where people figured out how to do something. They found a solution, but they never found a way to take it to market. So if the federal agency that wanted the solution, they might buy it initially, but they don't need it forever. And now this patent is just sitting there in somebody's notebook or shelf somewhere. And it has a commercial value, but the people who figured it out don't have any way of getting it to the market. Seldara Medical focuses specifically in the medical world, and they focus on research institutions and medical professionals around the country who have found a solution to a problem. And it could be a medical cure. It could be a successful medical treatment for certain health issues. But they have found a way to partner with those folks and really vet the products and figure out where the market is for it, what problem it'll solve, where the market is, how to get it reproduced and tested and vetted and fully compliant with any relevant regulations and get it to the market so that it can solve the problem. So they get the solutions off of paper and out into the world.
Yeah, I think I remember now, these are the folks that came out of Dartmouth, have a relationship with Dartmouth. I think Dartmouth Medical.
They do. They have a relationship with Dartmouth Medical, and they have a relationship with clinicians and research institutions all over the country.
I was also delighted to see that, and we've seen this in several people have come through, the growth of the microbrewery business here in New Hampshire. It's quite doing quite well.
It is doing quite well, and we had two of them that we were able to recognize this year at our Small Business Week Awards program. One of them is located in Northampton, Throwback Brewery. That was our New Hampshire and New England Regional Woman-Owned Small Business of the Year. And the other was Abel Ebenezer Brewing Company, was our veteran-owned small business of the year.
Yeah, we're hoping actually to do remotes from both of those sites, seriously.
So, excellent
idea. That's all Don talks about, is doing a remote from a brewery.
And I personally, I don't know why it should be. Yeah, yeah.
And we should watch drones from there. So we're running towards the end of the show, but I know a couple of topics you wanted to cover, Andrea.
Well,
so.
I just want to ask you about the woman-owned, the regional woman-owned business. Will they go to a national platform?
Unfortunately, no. The national platform is very narrow in its scope, and nationally, we're competitive with the Small Business Person of the Year and with the Exporter of the Year. And then there are some other categories that don't actually have a district component to them, such as subcontractors and prime contractors. A couple of years ago, we did have a national winner for the subcontractor of the year, which was RTH Mechanical.
It's
rare to have a national winner because there's a lot of competition out there in this country. There are some amazing businesses all over the place. But every so often, we get a national winner.
Nice. Well, I want to talk to you about the other thing that I know SBA is running, this Emerging Leaders Program. And so I was aware that last year you had several businesses make a concerted effort to attend, what is it, 13 workshops?
The Emerging Leaders Program, it's about a six-month period of time that it operates over, and it includes 13 classroom sessions, homework assignments, outside small mentoring meeting groups, and a variety of other components to running the business. And we are very grateful to you and UNH Manchester because you provided us with the space to hold our class last year and this year.
Yeah.
And that's a vital component to it, to have a nice central location that people can find and get to.
With parking.
And with parking.
Very important.
So with the Emerging Leaders.
I teach at UNH. I can't get parking.
Well, guess you've got to join our
Don,
class.
I think you better.
I don't have the juice that you have, obviously.
But so this Emerging Leaders, what kind of things are the businesses taught?
Well, this educational program targets businesses that are poised to grow. So we're not targeting startups. We're not targeting huge businesses. There's a range. We'd like the businesses to have at least a few hundred thousand in revenues, but no more than 10 million. That's still a pretty big range. We want them to have been around for at least 3 years, and we want them to have potential for growth, but for a little education and and some networking and some connections and knowing how to do things or where to find the help, these businesses could be more impactful than they already are. So the program is designed to help these businesses really understand themselves and their potential and how to move forward and onward and upward, and they come out of it after this six-month process with a three-year strategic growth plan. And some of the businesses are able to implement steps while they're still in the class saying, if I do this, if we focus more energy on this and less on that, or if we do this, or if I actually make the commitment to hire someone to focus on this, it'll pay me back in 6 months' time. They're able to implement things even before they complete the class. And by the time they're graduating, they've already started down that path to growth. The program's been around 9 or 10 years. I'm not positive how many years. We got our first class last year. It was originally designed as an inner city urban development kind of product. And New Hampshire's not that populated. So we did not have the program until last year. So we had it last year. It was a wonderful success. We've got it again this year. We were able to fill the room again.
Who's teaching it?
This year it's being taught by Eric Spieth, who is currently the director of the Enterprise Center in Plymouth. Great. And is up at Plymouth State University.
And so if somebody listening to the program today wants to consider participating, it's not coming around again and for, what, another year?
The program probably is offered once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And stay tuned late next fall, which is when we would announce if we're able to offer it again.
Yeah.
And the company that we contract with that actually develops and improves the curriculum every year is called Interise, Interise. And you can find them online, the site for registering your intent to apply or, you know, your interest in the program is open year-round. The only thing that would impact that is if for any reason we can't host the program next year, it's free to log on and apply. So
businesses can apply right now for next year.
Yes.
Great. That's good to know.
And if the program isn't offered in New Hampshire, it may be offered in another state that people could go to? Or
Generally, they're geographically defined on where.
On a regional basis or something?
Smaller than a regional basis.
Okay.
The first one that was held in Boston was specifically for Boston.
I see.
And then as they had more and more of the classes, they expanded their boundaries a bit because they've had the program since the beginning. They were one of the very first. Originally, there were 10 cities, and Boston was one of them. It's now in 56 different places. We don't have it in a city per se. We're holding the classes in Manchester, but it's a New Hampshire Emerging Leaders product because we don't have the same kind of population centers.
Right, sure.
So same thing with Vermont. You know, Vermont has less than half the population we have. So it is a Vermont product that's being offered there. But in a lot of places, it's very specifically South Houston, you know, or it's a very specific neighborhood that they're focused on or community that they're focused on.
I'm curious how business owners plug in to find out all that's going on. So one suggestion that I make is that people should follow our Facebook page because we try to post all these things when Emerging Leaders is starting to take application or when we want to get people to think about that or when SBA hosts a really good seminar like taxes for your small business or, you know, the ABCs of lending or, you know, borrowing money. And I just wonder how businesses, you know, how you would advise them to kind of get in that loop so they hear about these things.
Businesses have a couple of options for how to do that. One of them requires that they be a little bit more proactive and visit our website every so often because we do have an online calendar there. But what may be more effective, because they kind of only have to do it once, is if a business goes to our website, sba.gov/NH, they will find a link somewhere down the bottom of that first page for signing up for our newsletter. And if you sign up for our newsletter, just give us an email address, then you will get the announcements from us every time, you know, with a calendar, what's going on this month, or, hey, look at this workshop that's coming up, whether it's the matchmaker, whether it's a webinar on how to do business with the government or specifically how to do business with the Department of Transportation or something like that, whether it's on food safety. We did a food safety webinar. We participate with all kinds of federal and state agencies that are sitting out here with resources to help small businesses, and we try to all partner together and get the word out. So just sba.gov/NH. You can find everything you need to know about us. You can find a calendar of events. You can sign up for our newsletter. You can find our staff directory, and all of our emails and phone numbers are right there, so you can find us anytime.
And does your staff have industry-specific Is that how they're sort of organized? You have people who are, you know, gee, this is our person for manufacturing. This is our person for retail. This is our person for, you know, process engineering. Or are you folks generalists because you know your programs and it's the programs that really matter.
Right. We are more generalists. And we have a lot of the individual one-on-one counseling that businesses may need is where we refer to our partners. And that's where we count on our New Hampshire Small Business Development Center and SCORE and the Women's Business Centers and the Government Contracting Assistance Center to do that kind of specific work. We do have some special expertise in the government contracting arena with the specialty programs, which is the Woman-Owned Small Business Program and the HUB Zone, which stands for Historically Underutilized Business Zones, or the 8A program, which is a government contracting business development program. Those are very specialized areas in the government contracting world, and we have a very active role in that, and someone in our staff who devotes a lot of her time to that. And then we have some generalists. We unfortunately lost one of our specialists, who is our lender relations specialist, who has a wonderful job with a bank now. But the upside is he's helping the bank do more SBA lending. The downside is we lost him from our staff. But most of our team are generalists. Now, we do have some specialized knowledge specifically for working with the lenders. And some of that definitely translates to helping businesses understand, here's what you need to know about getting financing. Most of that, however, we defer to our partners because we've got a great group of both volunteer and professional advisors in the state who can really focus on that while we focus on some of the more generalized outreach as well as training the lenders and making sure all the resources in the state know what we can bring to the table and how to reach us.
Well, we have to begin wrapping up, but I do want to ask you one question. Are there hub zones in and around the New Hampshire area?
Coos County is a hub zone county.
Okay.
And recently we had an expansion that's going to last at least until the 2020 census, I believe, that includes Grafton, all of Grafton and Sullivan counties. And it also includes most of the state of Vermont have become hub zone communities. Now, to be a potentially eligible hub zone company, it's not just the business that has to be located in a hub zone. It's at least a third of the employees as well. And that's difficult if you only have a few census tracts that are identified as hub zone tracts. But when you have entire counties, now it's much easier. Odds are every business in there, at least a third of their employees, also reside in a hub zone.
Well, it really makes sense for businesses to look for employees in those areas because being a company that's associated with a hub zone can give you, especially in government bids, some advantage in terms of the procurement process.
There is a hub zone businesses. That's one of the goaling targets that all federal agencies are goaled on contracting with hub zone companies. So there is a target there for them to meet, and we need more hub zone firms. Now, we recently got from this expansion, we recently acquired two additional hub zone firms that are over in, I believe, Grafton County, both of them. But there are some census tracts in other places. We have an active hub zone firm in Manchester who happens to be located in a hub zone and has done some very creative and targeted training programs to ensure that it always has enough employees that also reside in hub zones. So there are some other places where there are a few tracks here and there where we may get an eligible business, but most of them are in those counties.
Terrific.
You know, it sounds like you are the center of the wheel in many ways, where you can, you know, you're a connector from banks to businesses to programs that are, you know, meant to be leveraged by the business community. So we really appreciate, first of all, you have great working knowledge of everything, which you should, but it's great to be able to articulate it for the rest of us to hear. And for that, we're very grateful.
Well, thank you so much.
Wonder if there's anything you'd like to, in closing, summarize, and if you could just give us your website one more time for the listeners.
One of the things I just want to make sure people know is that I think we refer to this as like no wrong door, or every door is the right doors. We all know each other. You don't have to know who do I talk to first. You just have to talk to somebody. Pick up the phone and reach any one of us, whoever it is you know. Andrea knows me. We know SCORE. We know state agencies. We know other federal agencies. We know lenders. We know if I'm not the answer, I don't have to be the answer. I just need to help people find the answer. So that's one of the big things is pick up the phone, call any one of us. And if we're not the right door, we will find the right door for you. And we're easy to find. SBA.gov is our main page, /NH takes you to us in New Hampshire. And our staff directory is right there. You can find any one of us.
Well, thank you.
How big is the office in New Hampshire?
We're currently mm-hmm. five people, but that's because we right. lost two in January. We hope okay. we hope to grow a little bit again.
Right.
Well, thank you very much, Greta Johansson, District Director for the SBA up in this part of the country, and doing a terrific job. Thank you very much for coming by and talking to us today. At this point, I will do as we do each week, turn the closing over to Andrea, because she always leaves us with sage advice for all listeners.
That's right. So again, Greta, thank you for making the time to be our guest. And remember, listening audience, you can spend more than you make, but you can only do it for so long.